Aloha and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Chris Vandercook.
And I'm Catherine Cruz. Today we sit down with our roundtable guests to ask the question, what can we as a state and a nation do about gun violence in schools?
Joining us in our studio are Corey Rosenlee, president of the Hawaii State Teachers Association, and State Representative Greg Takayama, who introduced House Bill 1908, which would prohibit multi-burst triggers on firearms, also known as bump stocks.
And participating by phone from the Big Island, Hawaii State Board of Education Student Representative Maya Gee and Dan Gu, member of the Hawaii Rifle Association.
And we want to hear from you. The numbers to reach us are 808-941-3689 on Oahu, 1-877-941-3689 on Neighbor Islands. It's Friday, February 23rd, and we'll pick up the conversation after the news. Welcome to The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Chris Vandercook. Today's program is a roundtable discussion of the epidemic of gun violence in America's schools and what we in Hawaii can do to address it.
I'm Catherine Cruz, and joining us on today's panel are Corey Rosenlee, the president of the Hawaii State Teachers Association. He's been a public school teacher in Hawaii for more than 20 years. And Dan Gu is a member of the Hawaii Rifle Association, a retired police officer, a firearms instructor, and a state of Hawaii hunting and education instructor.
Greg Takayama is a state representative for the Pearl City area. He introduced House Bill 1908, which would ban the sale or possession of so-called bump stocks in the state of Hawaii. Bump stocks were used in the 2017 Las Vegas shooting.
And Maya Gee is a senior at Kealakehi High School on Hawaii Island. She's also the 2017-2018 public school student representative on the Hawaii State Board of Education. She joins us from the Big Island as she shares her personal views.
And we want to hear from you, the listener. The numbers to reach us are 808-941-3689 on Oahu or 1-877-941-3689 on Neighbor Islands. And let me address State Representative Takayama with a sort of an opening question, which is, Greg, it's been my understanding that Hawaii's gun laws are better than most. Is that a fair assessment?
Absolutely. We are looked to by other states as a model state in terms of effective gun laws. You know, we rate either one or two in terms of low gun deaths, and in terms of effective gun control laws, we're rated in the top five consistently by those organizations that look at gun laws across the country.
What's missing?
Well, you know, we're always looking for loopholes that exist in our gun laws. For example, up until the shootings in Las Vegas, not very many people heard of something called bump stocks. Bump stocks, for your info, is a device that's attached to a semi-automatic weapon to make it virtually automatic. And this was used, as I said, in the Las Vegas massacre for the simple reason to accelerate the rate of gunfire and to hurt as many people as he could, which he did.
And Corey, what can you share with us? Has the teachers' union ever had to really take a position on firearms in the schools?
Well, actually, you know, our national organization, the National Education Association, has. I mean, when we talk about these school shootings, you know, we've had teachers die. If you look at both what happened in Parkland and what happened in Newtown, it's, you know, teachers go to school and they don't think that they're going to have to put up their bodies to defend their students. But unfortunately, too many of our teachers have had to do that.
There's a caller on the line, on line one, Damien from Kauai. Damien, I'm interested in your response to what Corey Rosenlee just said.
Well, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a teacher at Kauai High School, and I did a quick poll of some of my friends at Pauhana, all of them teachers, last week, asking them if they found themselves in the same situation that Scott Beagle found himself in at Parkland High School, which is you leave the door open and the girl gets into the classroom safely, but you risk taking a bullet. Would you do that? And seven of the eight teachers, well, they didn't like the question, but when they gave their heartfelt response, they said, yes, of course I would. That's what I'm trained to do. And the eighth teacher said, I don't know. I'm a single mother. I always have to think of my kids first. So to me, it's interesting that we're ready to die for our kids because we have such strong feelings, protective feelings towards them. But then when you start adding guns, are we willing to kill a kid? It becomes a very murky conversation, and I'm interested in non-lethal methods of incapacitating a potential shooter.
And we haven't heard that much about those. Damien, thanks for your call. We have a student on the line from Maya. I just want to make sure we've got you connected by phone. Can you hear us?
Yes. Good morning, Chris.
Hi, Maya. Thanks very much for taking part in this. We don't want to go on too long talking without getting the perspective of an actual student, so we really welcome your participation in this.
Thank you.
What's been your reaction to what you've been hearing in recent days?
It's been absolutely devastating. I've been talking to students throughout the state of Hawaii, and there's been very mixed responses, actually. Some students are very shocked to not only see what's been happening in Parkland, Florida, but also seeing that what's been happening within their own community. Several high schools and intermediate schools throughout the state have been experiencing gun threats as well as other possibilities of school shootings, and I think it's really triggering students to not only be more aware of their surroundings, but also be more aware of what's happening in Washington, D.C., and what's happening within the local legislature.
Maya, do you feel a student movement developing behind this?
Oh, absolutely. I definitely feel a student movement happening behind this, especially within Hawaii. After talking to several students, one thing that I've noticed is that we understand and acknowledge that Hawaii does have one of the most strict gun laws. But we also feel that this is not enough. Thankfully, a school shooting has never happened in our state, and we also hope that it never does. But we also don't want to wait for one to happen in order to further close any loopholes within our gun laws or further improve gun regulation.
And Jan Gu, are you on the line? We'd really like to hear your point of view after hearing some of the statements.
Yes, I'm here.
So what are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, the Second Amendment is one of 27 amendments in our Constitution. And if you look at that amendment, you can't take the Second Amendment and say it's less than the First Amendment, the right of free speech, or it's less than the Fourth Amendment, prohibition of unreasonable searches by the government in your home. So all the amendments are equally weighed. They're equally important to our Constitution. So I understand that there's laws that are enacted to protect everyone from people who shouldn't have firearms. But at the same time, we need to protect the owners of firearms and the Second Amendment because they have rights too. And we shouldn't trample on the rights of law-abiding citizens because of a few things that bad people do. So the thing that I always tell people is that you need to learn to be able to protect yourself because obviously in this situation with Florida, the government, the police department, the FBI, and everybody else was not able to, everybody's seen the red flags, but we're all human. So there's a lot of failure in the system that could have prevented this person from getting a firearm. So that's my take on it. I've been a law enforcement officer for over 30 years, and I've never been to a case where the suspect is still there. Yeah, for instance, bank robberies. I've never been to a bank robbery where the suspect was still there. So people need to learn to be able to protect themselves. And I think this is one of the situations where if people learn to protect themselves and took the steps to learn the things necessary to keep them safe, we'll be a lot farther than we are now.
Dan, I want to ask you to react to something that the president said within the last 24 hours.
These people are cowards. They're not going to walk into a school if 20% of the teachers have guns.
What do you think of that, Dan?
Well, you know, I kind of chuckle whenever I go around town or I don't. There's no gun-free zone stickers here in Honolulu that I've seen. But when you go on the mainland, there's gun-free zone stickers all over. And that's just a red flag for someone who wants to commit something terrible to say I'm going to go there rather than over there. So, for instance, I have lights on in my house at night around my yard. And the thing we tell people, which is when you go away at night for dinner or when you're not away, put your lights on timer in your house so people think that you're home. It's the same thing. If you tell somebody, all my lights are off, I'm not home, the newspapers are stacked up in the driveway, that's telling a burglar, come and burglarize my house. It's the same thing here. If you have places of business, schools that say, we're gun-free, we're a theater, we're gun-free zone, you're just telling people, hey, come over here, because nobody here is going to be here to stop you or protect the innocent people.
Dan, I want to ask you to just kind of hang with us on the line and ask some of our other panelists to weigh in. Corey, what are you thinking? Corey Rosenlee of the Hawaii State Teachers Association.
So, I mean, one of the things that's, ignored in the situation, there was a sheriff at that school. He had a gun. He was trained. And that sheriff didn't want to go against an AR-15. So do we expect the math teacher or the lunch lady to do it? I mean, it's ridiculous to make our schools armed camps. I mean, what's the next step? If we don't have teachers armed, are we going to put up machine gun nests and barbed wire as well? I mean, the reality is schools are places for people to learn. You know, if you want to arm teachers, arm us with books, arm us with air conditioners, arm us with air conditioners, computers. Those are the things that we need to be armed with. Arming our schools are not going to make our schools a safe place. They're going to make a place where kids are afraid of school, they're worried about school. And as a parent, I don't want a teacher with a gun in that school because, look, things happen when you have guns. I mean, teachers have been known, guns go off. There's been mistakes on this one. You know, I want my daughter to go to school where she's in a safe place where she has a chance to learn.
You know, from a legislative standpoint, if I could, I'd like to respond to something that Dan mentioned, which is that the legislature seems anti-gun. And from a legislative standpoint, I have to say that I have many friends who are gun owners, and I respect their right to exercise their use of firearms. I'm not anti-gun. I am pro-gun safety. And from that standpoint, you know, we're, as I said, always looking for loopholes to close. 2 years ago, the legislature passed a law that prohibited people with serious mental illness from owning guns. Under the then current law, people who were, for example, committed to a mental institution and had guns were given 30 days to surrender their guns. The law we passed allowed police to seize them immediately. That same year, we also passed laws to prohibit gun ownership by those who are subject to protective orders, restraining orders, and who have been convicted of stalking. And I have to say that in each of these cases, we were fought tooth and nail by proponents of the Second Amendment, members of the National Rifle Association, and the Hawaii affiliate. So this is an ongoing struggle. But as I said, we're just looking for safe gun laws.
A caller from Pahoa has something to weigh in on that, Craig. Sue, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I come from a military and hunting family, and I think people are not thinking about reality in that. What if the shooter grabs a hostage or a number of hostages? Are armed teachers going to shoot through them? Is anybody going to shoot through the hostage situation? If you arm teachers, that's the first thing a shooter will do, is grab a hostage. Also, if you have a number of people coming from different directions, panicking, pulling out their guns, will people die in friendly crossfire? I think the reality of situations is not being addressed. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue. And as a member of a military family, you've been a little bit closer to what happens when guns are actually in use, right? I think we lost that caller, but she makes some good points.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I heard this morning on a TV show, they spoke to a deputy sheriff in Florida that said, imagine if you were responding to gunshots being fired in a school, and you get out of your police car, you approach the school, and you see people running out, some adults holding weapons. Who are you going to shoot, And so could lead to a large number of uncontrolled circumstances, most of them we don't want to see.
There have been also calls to install locks on doors so that they lock from the inside. And I know the DOE has said, well, you've got to really stop and think about that because, okay, what if the shooter is on the inside of the classroom and locks the door and takes hostages? Or, you know, just you can take the pick up the stone and turn it over and over again. There was, I believe, a student who came up with a device that you can lock the door from the inside and it can't be shot out by a gun. You know, a lock might slow a shooter down, but again, if the shooter is inside the classroom and locks the door from the inside and has hostages, then what?
One of our roundtable panelists isn't actually at the table, and I'm thinking of you, Maya. She's a senior at Kalakehi High School on Hawaii Island. What do you think of what you've been hearing in the last few minutes, the whole idea of arming teachers and, you know, the whole – how would that feel to you?
As a student, and I know several of my peers agree with me, that teachers should come to school to specifically teach. Teachers are here to educate us, and I personally would not feel very safe knowing that my teachers are armed. Personally, I also believe that there would be a lot of confusion amongst, if there ever was the possibility of a school shooting, of having all these adults fully armed, but also create the sense of panic also just creates a lot of confusion. And one thing that I kind of want to point out is that with the student activism that's been happening throughout the United States, one thing that I really want to highlight is a lot of us, a majority of students, especially within the state of Hawaii, we don't necessarily not support the Second Amendment. We just simply want gun control, and that's not to take away someone's right to bear arms, but to control the accessibility of attaining a firearm, and we just really want to strengthen the process of reporting individuals who harm the public.
Maya, thank you. Dan Gu, are you still on the line with us?
Yes, I'm still here. You know, the thing is that in the majority of these shootings, the person has obtained the firearm legally. Specifically, the latest one in Florida, he obtained the firearm legally. He went through a background check. He was over 18 years old. And in Florida, is 18. Hawaii is 21. But he did obtain it legally. But the failure of everybody before and after you obtained the firearm, I think that's where we have to focus our attention to. There's all these red flags. So the system works. The system works. You need a background check. You need to be a certain age. You're taking drugs. You're not allowed to own a firearm, obtain a firearm. If you're under kind of mental treatment, you're not allowed to get a firearm. If you're a convicted felon, you're not allowed to get a firearm. So we have all these things in place. But the problem is that everything else failed with this particular individual when we talk about this particular case in Florida. If those red flags were looked at, this could have been stopped. So when we say we want more laws and we need to do something, there's laws already there. It's a failure of the system.
Dan, there's nothing in the laws that you would change then?
You know what? The laws are there. If he was flagged appropriately and maybe interviewed by the FBI, then this might have been able to have been stopped. The point about not wanting to have teachers with firearms in the class, I understand that. You know, some teachers may want to do it, some may not. But at least we should have a armed guard there. And you can say, well, you know, there was an armed police officer and he didn't go in. Sure, he didn't go in, but don't blame everything else because of that. I mean, that's his fault. He should have gone in there. If I was a police officer, I would have went in there. But again, like I said, everybody's human. There's going to be people who fail. There's going to be people who don't follow through. And so, how are you going to legislate? How are you going to legislate that?
Dan, are you a veteran?
No, I'm not.
Have you ever been shot at?
Have I ever shot someone?
Have you ever been shot at?
No.
I'm wondering if you say you said if I were a police officer, I would have gone in there. I just wondered if you can be sure of that.
You know what? if that situation happened, I can't tell you, but I know that when I was a police officer for 20 years, and I still do some law enforcement work here part-time, when I was a police officer for 20 years, I did not stop at anything that came my way.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify that. Corey Rosenly of the State Teachers Association.
So I'm a social studies teacher, and I was listening to Dan speak, and first of all, there's no amendment that's absolute. The First Amendment is not absolute. We have restrictions on free speech. And no one's saying that we can't protect yourself. We're not saying the Second Amendment is less than any other amendments. What we're saying is you can own a gun. But in countries around the world, in states with the strictest gun laws, the research is extremely clear. The stronger the gun control, the less gun deaths you have. And so the question we ask is this. We're talking about how to protect schools when guns are brought onto campuses. Shouldn't we be discussing how we don't have guns coming on gun campus on the school campuses to begin with? And we've gotten into this discussion in our country where it's an absolute. And the conversation is ban all guns or, you know, allow semi-automatic guns to occur. And the reality is that as Americans, we agree. If you look at most polls, I think recently a poll came on, it's 97% of Americans said there should be, you know, stronger background checks. And can't we make sure that there's a waiting period or that, you know, that when our country for 10 years banned assault weapons, it worked and gun deaths went down. And right when in 2004, when it expired, gun deaths went back up again. So we can create a society that allows guns, but also make sure that we protect our citizens.
You know, that's a great point that Corey brings up, you know, the fact that there are many incidents where shooters, like in Florida, obtain their firearms legitimately, despite the gun laws. But I look at it from this perspective. Think of how many shootings may have been averted because of the existence of strict gun laws, particularly here in Hawaii. So that's the way I look at it.
If you're just joining us, our guests in our studio are State Representative Greg Takeyama, Corey Rosenly, president of the Teachers Union, and on the phone, Dan Gu, member of the Hawaii Rifle Association, and Maya Gee, a senior at Kealakehi High School on Hawaii Island. We do want to hear from you. You can join the discussion by calling 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. And if you're having trouble getting through, you can also reach out to us on our website or through social media.
That's because we've got two of our roundtable participants on the line with us, and one of them being an actual student, Maya Gee from Kealakehi High School. Maya, just wanted to check in with you. You've been hearing the last couple of comments. Where do you and the movement that you see developing, where do you go from here?
Where we go from here is, one, kind of further educating ourselves, our peers, and each other of how we can improve this issue on a local, state, and national level. Also, getting students registered to vote within the state of Hawaii, helping students understand their civic responsibility. I know on Oahu that several students are working on reaching out to the victims of the Parkland shooting and their families. I know that multiple schools across the state are planning to do school walkouts. But it's also introducing more students to the political process and how they can get involved with our members of Congress and really understanding how we can improve this flawed system. I kind of wanted to follow up on something that was previously said.
Please.
I believe it was Dan who was mentioning a flawed system. I was kind of wondering what specifics you meant by that.
Dan, you still with us?
Okay, so we talk about this particular case, even the Riverside terrorist situation. In that situation, there were neighbors who saw things but didn't report it to the police. In this situation, FBI was notified of some things. The teachers were aware of his behavior. Even his friend called the FBI, I believe, you know, in January sometime, telling them about his attitudes and, you know, what he said he wanted to do. So there's a lot of things here that, and especially in Hawaii, a lot of people don't want to say something because they don't want to, they don't want to be judgmental, or they don't want to be criticized or being, saying you're racist or whatever. So, in the Hawaii Oriental culture, you kind of be quiet, you don't say anything. But everyone has to really speak up. And like I said, it's a failure of the system. I think the laws are there. A good example was a lady named Carol Brown in 2015. And you can look it up. You can Google it. Carol Brown, 2015. She had a temporary restraining order on her boyfriend. And the police were supposed to give her her concealed carry license or permit to acquire a firearm. And after 30 days went by, she didn't get it. So she went down to the police station to find out the status of her application. Well, it wasn't ready, and the next day, the boyfriend came over and stabbed her in front of her front door. So the laws are there. The temporary restraining order was there, but again, it's only a piece of paper. The laws are there, but when people fail the system, that's where the issues come. And the question I want to know is, you folks want to do something. We all want to do something. But what are we going to do? What are we going to do besides banning all firearms, taking away firearms from citizens? You're not going to take away my firearm because I use it because I want to use it to protect my family. When I travel to the mainland, I take it with me, and they know that I'm armed, and if anything happens, they know they'll be protected. But what do you propose besides just taking away everybody's firearms?
What do you propose, Dan?
I would like to hear it.
Dan, what do you propose? If you were given the power to solve this problem, what would you do?
You know what? To tell you the truth, I would go back to where we were back in the 60s or 70s, where the family was a tight unit. Everybody sat down for dinner. We prayed before we ate. We had prayer in schools. We had God. God was number one on our list. And you asked me that question. That's the truth, and that's what I believe in. I think we've fallen so far behind where single parent is okay. Most of these shooters are fatherless parents. And so I know it's a bigger issue than just gun control. It's a societal issue. So
can I just jump
you asked
here?
Me that question. That's what I'm going to say.
Maya, go ahead.
Yeah. So you're kind of just talking about how the signs that he displayed, the Parkland shooter, was just not amplified enough. He was expelled from his school for just disturbances that he was kind of just known for. There were signs, and he was expelled, and there were other signs throughout his community. So you're saying that it's not necessarily as being voiced enough, and I can understand where you say that coming from, especially a Hawaii community where saying certain things could make you be tagged as a so-called racist. But at the same time, while this is an issue about mental health, about community, but it's also really about gun control. I mean, when I think about it, the fact that he was able to have get his hands on an AR-15 is really astonishing to me. Because let's say that we did ban assault weapons and semi-automatic weapons. The significance of the damage he was done and the number of victims that would have happened in the shooting would have been dramatically less. So I'm kind of just wondering where you stand on the banning of assault and assault rifles, assault weapons.
Okay, so let's get definitions straight here. An assault rifle is a automatic rifle. You press the trigger once, and the bullets just fly out of the firearm. He had a semi-automatic rifle, which is one of the most popular. Well, it's a downgrade where you have to press the trigger for each bullet that comes out. So, automatic firearms are already illegal. So when you want to talk about banning AR rifles, and also, mind you, AR does not stand for automatic rifle. It's AR stands for the Carmelite, which is the company who created it. If you want to ban semi-automatic rifles, then you're banning everything. because there are hunting rifles and there are lots of other rifles, hundreds, thousands of other rifles that can do the exact same thing his rifle did, but it just doesn't look as scary because it doesn't have, it's not black, it might be made of wood. So when you say we need to do something, what are you proposing to do without taking away everybody's firearms? That's what I'm saying.
So let me respond to this. Dan, number one, no one's talking about taking away your gun, okay?
Let me just finish.
So the thing is, number one is talking about taking away your gun. Number two is that when you have gun control, it doesn't mean that you stop all gun deaths. But what we do know is this. In countries that have strong gun control, which does not mean they take away everyone's guns, the gun deaths are a lot less. And the same thing happened in this country. No one's going to come and take your gun. But the thing is, can't we have some common sense that we make sure that people have to have a 14-day waiting period or that people get mentally tested? Or we make sure that, listen, if I got to go drive a car, I got to go get a license, I got to take a test. Why is it that when it comes to a gun that can kill someone, we can't have some basic rules that we would expect when that my 16-year-old can go past a driver's license test? She's got to go through all sorts of training. But an 18-year-old can buy a gun? I mean, the thing is, there's got to be some compromise in our society that respects your right to own a gun, but also respects my right to send my child to school and not be worried that she's going to be shot and killed.
Corey, I want to bring in a caller from Eva Beach. Tim from Eva Beach, can you hear me?
Hey, good morning, and thank you for having this this discussion.
Sure.
Sadly, it seems that it's over and over and over again, and nothing ever happens. I wanted to bring up a couple points. And it's a great discussion, very well thought out. For the officer or retired officer, how often did he go through training, both practical and risk assessment, as part of his duties to fulfill being a police officer? Next question is, ask for his honesty. How many times did he see individuals that had applied to the academy or applied to become a police officer who were rejected because of mental issues or just an inability to truly assess a possible threat? And is it really realistic to believe that teachers in particular who are from a family of teachers, I know that at the end of the school day, the teacher's work continues for a good 3 or 4 more hours at least. To that, but that individual who pursued a career in becoming an educator would have all the faculties to be also an individual who would be put in a place of having to take a life. The other point I would like to bring up is that there's a no-fly list that the Department of Homeland Security has identified a number of people who are restricted from commercial airfare, commercial flights, because they are deemed to be a risk to society and public safety. Congress has not extended that same list to those same individuals and restricting them from purchasing or possessing firearms.
Tim, you're covering a lot of ground here. I want to make sure we have time to address each of the things that you brought up. Greg?
You know, a little while ago, I think Dan asked, what can we do to improve our gun laws? And there are two common sense measures pending before the legislature right this moment. One is to ban bump stocks, which I said earlier, convert semi-automatic weapons to something resembling a fully automatic weapon, which is illegal federally and in our state. But we need to get rid of these devices. Even President Trump agrees that these devices have no place in our country. Second thing we can do is there's another bill that's pending. Right now, if a registered gun owner is disqualified from owning a gun for a conviction, or something else that he's done, like be the victim, be the recipient of a protective order. He has 30 days to relinquish his weapon. The bill that's being proposed would reduce that time to 48 hours because in the view of the police, there's a lot that can happen in 2.5 weeks. So let's reduce the time that the firearm owner has to relinquish his weapon. It's a common sense measure that I think should pass, and I would hope that we'd get the support of the NRA and Hawaii Rifle Association and students and everyone else to get behind something like this, which to me is common sense.
There's a number of calls across the country to raise the age that you can buy a gun from, I think, 18 to 21. You mentioned lots of legislation this year. I just want to throw something in here. I know our partners at Civil Beat went down to the campaign spending office and looked at all the campaign contributions from the NRA. And I think, Greg, as a journalist, you know, you and I have both done this exercise. Do you get any money from the NRA?
No, I haven't, and I'm surely not going to be getting any because I've been the advocate of some measures that they strongly oppose. But, you know, many other of my colleagues have, and it's legitimate. There's nothing to prohibit them from receiving campaign funds from anyone. So I'm not criticizing them at all. But at the same time, I have to point out that the NRA has been an effective advocate in stopping proposals. There was a proposal last year to prohibit people who are on the federal no-fly list from obtaining weapons here in Hawaii. That bill got shot down largely because of opposition from people like members of the NRA.
Former Governor Cayetano put a message on Facebook urging all legislators to refuse campaign funding from National Rifle Association, Hawaii Rifle Association. Be interesting to see if that takes hold because they're a significant campaign contributor, right?
Yes, yes.
Corey, do you think that some kind of change in, you know, the whole idea of the lobbying on the part of rifle associations is frequently comes up in these discussions? Do you think that's likely to change in the aftermath of Parkland?
Well, the one thing that's really, I shouldn't say excited, but that it's brought something to my heart, though, is how students have taken activism after the Parkland shooting. And it's the students that are leading us. They want to go to safe schools. And to see these young student activists saying, you know, this is our country. I know they have oftentimes, we look at this generation and find them not to be active, and I think they're disproving this. They're showing that they have great skills on social media and organizing. And I think that they've sent a very clear message. They say, we're kids. You're adults. You guys should be able to solve this problem so that we don't have to go to schools like this. I was very disappointed to see, though, that when those kids traveled to Florida and to ask their legislators to meet with them, that some of those legislators refused to even talk to the students. And I think that sends the absolute wrong message. You know, I think that, you know, you owe these kids that have gone through this the opportunity to hear their voice and hopefully to make some changes, common sense legislation to these gun laws.
Oh, I'm excited by the prospect that our students will get involved in the government process because, to me, they're our future. And to students who are not interested in getting involved, I think they have to know that, you know, in every school where a massacre has occurred, from Virginia Tech to Columbine to Florida, nobody expected that it would happen, but it happened. And so we need to do everything we can to prevent this from happening here in Hawaii.
We do have a parent who reached out to us on Twitter, Jada Rufo. She asks, how can parents get information on a school in lockdown? Corey, I don't know if you want to take this.
You know, I think that's more of a Department of Education question, but oftentimes those things happen so quickly. You know, it's not like the schools have their own communication specialists. It's oftentimes what happens at the schools.
Trying to lock up the phone lines.
I mean, and look at what at Parkland, the way they were finding information was the kids were using Twitter from inside the schools. You know, so I think that, you know, that's more of a DOE question.
Well, I know the DOE has said that usually when the kids are in a lockdown, as we've seen, you know, many times, that sometimes parents get nervous and they will just go on campus and bang on the door and, you know, demand that they get their child out of the room. But that can be pretty frightening for the kids in the classroom because you don't know who's on the other side of the door. And also scary for the teachers who are worried about the welfare of their children. So, yeah, it's a tough one.
Another thing that, you know, we mentioned door locks as being proposed as a partial help. But, you know, in many schools, there are no real effective communications between school offices and the classrooms. And so that's something fundamental that I think needs to be corrected at every school where such systems do not exist.
Maya, on Hawaii Island, I keep wanting to return to you because, you know, there's so much talk about what students can do. I want you to weigh in on this. Can you hear me all right?
Yes. So kind of just going back to this discussion of where we see ourselves in the future, it's without a doubt that we are striding forward. Students throughout the country are just striding forward. And just a part of that is that we really believe that it's time to start making significant policy changes within our legislation. And we just really want to start seeing some change. I feel like it's been a really long time, including since the Sandy Hook shooting in Parkland. I personally know someone in Florida who was lives pretty near from the school. And just hearing the devastation that happened there really encourages me and peers throughout the state and throughout the country that change needs to be made. And it's not only on the community level, but it's on the national level. So,
well, Maya, Corey referred earlier to the fact that a lot of Florida legislators didn't even want to meet with the students mm-hmm. who came to Tallahassee. How did you feel about that?
I think that's infuriating. I mean, I feel like for a long time there's been this adult generation that's been kind of shutting students down, kind of saying that we're not fully aware of what's happening within our country, but we're kind of stepping up to the game here. I mean, we're putting our hands in and we're saying, hey, we're here to figure this out. We're here to take charge. We want to figure out how we can improve our country. And the fact that Florida legislatures didn't even want to take the time to really sit down and talk to these students, that's infuriating to me.
Dan Gu of the Hawaii Rifle Association is with us by phone. Dan, it sounded as if when we were just talking a few minutes ago that you weren't really recommending any current changes to the laws.
Well, you know, a good example, we have a lot of laws already, which, you know, whether a good example was I have two children. And I called the school because there was this one particular student who wore a black trench coat to school every day. And I called the school and I said, you need to take a look at this student. Something's wrong. Nobody wears a black trench coat to school every day. And I called the school three times and they didn't do anything. They didn't interview the student. They didn't talk to the parents. They didn't do anything. So what I'm saying is that, and I'm a law enforcement officer, retired, so I recognized it. I said, something's wrong with this. And the school didn't do anything. So, you know, we have these things, and it's a mental illness problem. But yet, when you speak up and things, and the other thing, they always say something, see something. You know,
yep.
See something, say something. But do they tell you folks what to see, what to look for? Is there any class to tell you what to look for? No, not none that I know. When I grew up, we had to hide under our desk because nuclear threat. Elementary school at Lilio Kalani Elementary School, we practiced hiding under our desk. But when they say, if you see something, say something, as an average citizen, do they know what they're supposed to look for? There's no training. So I'm saying is that we can look at all these loopholes, laws, and things like that, but the bottom line is that it's a big issue. It's a big issue that has a lot of ground to cover, and just making laws that may or may not work isn't the answer.
I think
that's what I'm trying to say.
I think Dan is right in the sense that it is a big issue, and correcting loopholes in our laws won't do it alone. People still need to speak up when they see disturbing behavior on the streets or by their neighbors. They need to do that. But we also need to enact laws that can make us a safer community. And common sense laws affecting the ownership of firearms is one step. But again, you know, active citizens, active young people, all of that is important too.
And just to respond to that, I mean, look, I would absolutely agree with you. Our schools need to be able to provide more mental health services. I know many of our counselors have to deal with 300 or 400 students on their caseloads. And, I mean, they're just trying to tread water. And we do need to. I mean, there's one area I agree. We need to have more mental health services. But, you know, you look at what Trump has done. One is he actually cut in his budget services for mental health programs. He actually changed the law when it came to preventing people with mental illnesses from being able to purchase guns. So, you know, I can absolutely agree that we need to do more on this one, especially at our schools. And I hope that's something that we can agree upon.
We've got a caller from Hawaii Kai. Claire, I want to thank you for your patience in staying on the line. You have two kids at Kaiser High School. What's on your mind?
Hi. So I really appreciate Maya's points and what she's the student activism that's occurred on the Big Island at her school. I'm concerned about the lack of discussion at my own kids' school. They're a freshman and junior at Kaiser, and when I talk to them about what kind of discussions they had had in their class, not necessarily about guns per se, but just the current event, this huge tragic event that happened last week, they said that they hadn't discussed anything in any of their classes, and their response was, "Mom, nobody cares." And I was really shocked by that, and shocked that none of their teachers had you know, brought this up as something that was just extremely timely and needed to be discussed. So I wondered, maybe for Corey, are teachers given any guidance about how to address these issues with their kids?
No. I hate to say it. I mean, it's going to get a little off topic, but sometimes there has been a lot of social studies and things like this have been often pushed aside. Normally, we've been trying to get teaching to the test, and I hate to say it, the gun shooting ain't on the test, so we ain't teaching it. And a lot of times at our schools, teachers have told, you're teaching this curriculum on this day, and if you get one step behind, there could be consequences. So that's another problem. But I would say that there are probably a lot of classrooms where there are conversations. And whether that's not necessarily sometimes a formal situation, it's also an informal situation. I think that when I was a social studies teacher, you would always take a moment to do this, not just for the benefit of just sharing, you know, what's going on in the news, but, you know, one of the things that the Parkland shooting showed is how much our teachers care for our students, you know, whether it's risking our lives or anything else like this. And I think one of the things I would want to make sure that my students, when they came back in, they would, you know, they feel comfortable. I think one of the situations that happened right after the shooting was in Kapolei Middle School. There was a threat of it, and a lot of parents and students were very scared coming to school, and they were afraid. And I think that one of the things that a lot of those teachers had to do when those kids came back was just reassure them that school is a safe place, you're going to be okay, and let's go back to learning.
We did have Jennifer in Hilo email us, and she had a question along those same lines, Corey, and it was for you. How can teachers and the union support the students speaking up on issues like this without being punished by the schools? But I think it's more of just acknowledge it. This happened last night. You read about it. You saw it on online or saw it on TV. But I think folks just want to acknowledge what's going on the outside the classroom.
You know, I think teachers can help, but I think one of the things I've appreciated, and I'd love to hear Maya's opinion on this too, is maybe this is the time where the kids need to lead us. I think what's been so powerful in the Parkland shooting is that it's been our students that have said, this needs to change. And I think, of course, as teachers, we always want to help. But I think that maybe the adults have tried, and we've been unsuccessful, and maybe this time our leaders and our politicians will listen to our kids and our students, and maybe that will be the catalyst that we'll actually be able to finally take action so we do not have to be back here and having the same conversation in a few months or next year.
Maya, that's kind of where you're coming from, isn't it?
Absolutely.
We've had Maya Gee, who's a senior at Kealakehi High School on Hawaii Island, joining us at a roundtable along with State Representative Greg Takayama, who introduced a bill yesterday to ban the possession of bump stocks.
Well, earlier this session.
Earlier this session. Corey Rosenlee is the president of the Hawaii State Teachers Association, and Dan Gu, member of the Hawaii Rifle Association, has joined us by phone. We're just about at the end of our show, so we're probably not able to accommodate any more calls. But some final thoughts, Greg?
Well, you know, I can't say enough about the enthusiasm that I heard from Maya and how welcome it is to hear. And I can say, not speaking for all politicians in Hawaii, but at least this politician would be more than happy to welcome students from any school into my office. And I'm sure that sentiment is shared by all of my colleagues.
Dan Gu, a member of the Hawaii Rifle Association, former police officer. Dan?
Well, the bottom line is that everyone needs to take care of themselves. We can't rely on government to do everything, obviously. We've seen the flaws. We've seen the mistakes, the misread flags. And you need to take care of yourself. For instance, how many of you know where to sit in a theater? How many of you know what to do when you get on an airplane? How many of you know where to sit when you sit at go to a restaurant?
Dan, I'm sorry, we have to cut you off. We've just hit the limits of our time for the show. Thanks very much to everyone for taking part.
And we thank you, the listener, for joining us on today's show.
If your call didn't make it on the air during today's discussion, you can still get in touch with our talkback line. The number for that is 808-792-8217.
You can also send us an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. And if you want to listen back to today's show, check out the Conversation Podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz.
Thanks to Representative Takayama, Corey Rosenlee, Dan Gu, and Maya Gee. My name is Chris Vandercook. Join us Monday for more of The Conversation.